She's working since 21 years in the United Nations. She's a great person. She's used to manage big organizations, big budgets, human resources, staff, finance. And she will bring a fresh wind to FIFA. Somebody from outside, not somebody from inside, not somebody from the past, but somebody new.
And that is FIFA's president, Gianni Infantino, announcing the appointment of the first female, first African woman from Senegal, Fanta Samba Diop Samora, to the post of the Secretary General of FIFA. And this took place during the organization's recent meeting in Mexico. Now, for further analysis of this recent FIFA appointment of Fatma Samba Diop Samora, we turn to Dr. Peter Aleji. Dr. Peter Aleji teaches history in the Department of History at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Dr. Aleji is a historian of late 19th and 20th century South Africa. He focuses on relationships between popular culture, politics, and social change.
Well, a lot has happened at FIFA in the last couple of years since the last World Cup in Brazil. The president who was in charge from 1998 to 2016, Sepp Blatter, won re-election in 2015 and then just a few days later announced his intention to resign, which he did eventually a few months later. So they held a special presidential election in February, which brought us a new president after a fiercely contested election between a European, Gianni Infantino from Switzerland, who was backed mainly by the European federations and later also the United States, and then Sheikh Salman from Bahrain, who had the support of Asian countries and most of the African ones. And so in the end, Infantino won that election on a platform of, let's say, mild reform within this quite corrupt organization now under investigation of the FBI, among other institutions. And I think there was a lot of pressure from the sponsors, from within the organization, and from the public to at least project an image of change, if not actual major reform. And so what Infantino did was try to get rid of that negative perception of FIFA in the public domain by nominating some new people as part of his team, as well as initiating some reforms at the institutional level. And so the nomination and then later approval of Fatma Samora from Senegal as the new Secretary General of FIFA, I think, should be understood in that way. And I think a very big benefit for Infantino to pick Fatma Samora is, as you said, that she has a wealth of experience working for particularly the United Nations Development Program. So she is a career diplomat in many respects. She's not a football person, so she doesn't come with that tainted air that so many football administrators, soccer administrators have, unfortunately. And also she comes from a region of the world, the African continent, which did not support the man who won the FIFA election in February, Infantino. And so I think it has a kind of political function, this appointment of Samora, because it is a peace offering of sorts by the winner, Infantino, to the African continent. And I would also add that the gender component is important because, you know, there were no women in the executive branch of FIFA until 2013, so very, very recently. And so to appoint a woman at the number two spot in FIFA, I think, is symbolic also of change in that respect.
So will she, Fantuma Samora get the support that she needs to be able to function within that male-dominated environment, Dr. Aleji?
That's a very good question. I think now, you know, with some of the changes that have taken place, there's a little bit more of a hope that that will indeed happen. So, for example, what used to be called the FIFA Executive Committee, this incredibly powerful closed circle of 24 men until 2013, has now been expanded to three dozen individuals, several of whom are women. So there's greater representation of women at the executive level. But also, the role of the FIFA Council now is a little bit different from the role of the executive committee that previously existed. In that sense, there's a new separation of functions between this council and the general secretariat, which is what Fatma Samoura will be heading. And so basically she is taking charge of the operational aspects of FIFA rather than the kind of political and strategic functions of the organization, which will remain in the hands of this expanded and slightly more diverse council. So I think her professional qualifications, again, with the United Nations Development Program in particular, very, very challenging places over the years, suggest that she's quite competent and able to run operations in a major international organization. Whether she's going to get the financial support of FIFA, the political and moral support of the organization, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, because she steps in a very challenging position, because I'm also wondering if Dr. Leji, the fact that, which is very recent, that women's soccer is being introduced. So I wonder if that has any influence, and with her success being a good bureaucrat, whether that would influence accepting women into this executive council that you are talking about, the fact that there is the women's soccer, which is still evolving, and then you have this executive, whether that would impact have an impact at all.
Well, I think FIFA has done some good in respect to the growth of women's football, particularly at the elite level around the world. But, you know, a lot of this growth really is centered on North America and Western Europe. And so while it is true that I think women's soccer internationally is more respected, if not accepted, than it has been in the past, you know, the road is still very, very long towards anything remotely close to a fair representation in comparison to the men's game. So equality is not there yet. But I think you're right. I think there's a perception within the organization of FIFA, and also perhaps among the public, that, you know, with this new legitimacy of the women's game as it becomes more and more popular and even watched, as we saw in the World Cup that the United States won last year, that there is greater space for women to also play a major role in administration. The challenge, I think, for women's football within FIFA also is that, you know, being in an organization run almost exclusively by men, and not just at the FIFA level, but also in the countries that are members of FIFA and in the continental confederations that are part of the structure of FIFA, it's very difficult to get money. It's very difficult to get corporate sponsorship, media attention, to get proper coaching development, to get girls in schools and in rural areas to play. And those are really the critical issues. And I think there's more hope now with Fatma Samoura, perhaps in the general secretary position, that, you know, greater attention will be paid to these very important issues. But again, these are very political and also strategic decisions that are out of her hands, as I understand it, in this newly reformed structure of FIFA, where she is mainly concerned with the management of day-to-day operations rather than making those big decisions that I just mentioned. But I think all in all, it can't hurt to have a woman at the number two position, but to what extent it's going to help, we'll have to wait and see again. Too early to tell.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering what will be her relationship with the president of FIFA, Infantino, and it was interesting that a few months ago, sometime last month, he actually went to South Sudan despite the conflict going on and non-implementation of agreement. There was football, African football, I think, you know, I'm exposing my ignorance of sports, but he was there. And, you know, was that just a sort of diplomatic move, or was that, you know, I wondered why he went to South Sudan, in actual fact.
Well, I think there are probably a couple of reasons. And number one, again, Infantino knows that the majority of African countries in FIFA did not vote for him. Almost nobody in Africa voted for him in those elections in February. And so I think he probably believes he needs to nurture his relationships with African football, and perhaps that's one way to look at that visit. The other way is that, you know, going back to Sepp Blatter and even before him, the president who preceded him, João Avelange from Brazil, you know, FIFA now sees itself as an organization almost on par with the United Nations in world affairs. And I know it's kind of funny in a way that a soccer organization should think of itself in such you know, exaggerated fashion. But these bureaucrats, because that's what they are really, you know, see themselves as cultural diplomats who could solve the world's big conflicts. And certainly South Sudan is, with the suffering and the conflict that's going on there, of course, and the recent independence and all the political turmoil connected with geopolitics, you know, that's a place where FIFA maybe wants to create a space for itself and try and play a role in conflict resolution. I think it's very unlikely that it's going to happen, but I think Infantino is continuing a tradition that's been around for some time, again, of FIFA seeing itself as a diplomatic force in international relations, as amusing as that may sound to people who really know how difficult and painful these conflicts are to resolve.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the appointment is from somebody at the United who was at the United Nations. So that alone says a lot in terms of those changes that you are talking about, the reforms that are happening within FIFA. But looking a little bit back into what happened in reference to the corruption, the resignation, and the pressure that FIFA fell into towards the end of last year, what is the progress in terms of FBI investigation and some of the arrests and so forth, and implications for South Africa and so forth? What is the update, Dr. Aleji?
Well, things are unfolding as we speak, so it's again, the news is very much of this moment. But let's say that just going back to the first arrests, which took place in the middle of 2015, and in fact just a few days before Blatter was reelected, and just a week or so before he eventually decided to resign, you know, there were seven individuals arrested, and then in December of 2015, several more arrests were carried out by the authorities. Is basically a cooperation between Switzerland and the United States. And almost all of these arrests are of people from North America, the Caribbean, and South America. But there have been other people who have felt the impact of this series of arrests. Now there's been more than three dozen people charged or arrested. And to give you a sense of how this has affected the organization of FIFA, of the men who voted, and they were all men, who voted to award the 2018 and 2022 World Cups, which went to Qatar and to Russia, only about a third of them remain in FIFA. Everyone else has either been voted out, has stepped down, is under investigation, has been charged, found guilty, forced out, or in a couple of cases died, or has been banned. I mean, this is remarkable, you know, that essentially two-thirds of the executive committee of FIFA that was around 2 years ago is no longer around. So it really has struck a major blow to FIFA. And, you know, people, individuals from Argentina, from Brazil, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, United States, and many, many other countries are involved. And, you know, some observers have noted that that it was interesting that it was the United States Department of Justice that was carrying out this investigation of soccer corruption, feeling that this was another way for the United States to, you know, kind of throw its weight around and possibly influence world soccer. And I think, you know, there is some truth to that. But, you know, if you look at how FIFA has over the years failed repeatedly at policing itself, and how, you know, it essentially descended into a den of sin and corruption and bribery that was hard to match elsewhere, I think the only hope for any kind of pressure to change, you know, has to come from outside of FIFA. And, you know, there are no international organizations that are able to exert that kind of you know, prosecutorial pressure. It has to come down to national authorities. And it just so happened that some of these financial crimes went through American banks, which empowered the United States authorities in Miami and New York in particular to go after both American citizens and also citizens of foreign countries doing business in the United States. So, you know, I think in a way here it's a hopeful situation that finally some of these crimes that have been going on for a long time have been brought out in the light. A third of the defendants have already pleaded guilty, so these are not charges that the United States authorities are making up. There's plenty of evidence that's been put forward. And I think without this investigation, I highly doubt there would have been any kind of reform at FIFA, and we probably would still have Sepp Blatter and the usual suspects running the show.
So in which country then are they being tried and being held, and who then has that authority to prosecute? Because I, from your vantage point, does FIFA have that kind of stipulations in terms of the corruption, and or will this be a way forward for it to define itself in legal terms in cases where its officials or its bureaucrats commit crimes?
Well, the legality of it is a bit complicated, but essentially, you know, FIFA is subject to Swiss law, and the relationship between Switzerland and the United States has changed, particularly in terms of, say, extradition of individuals charged by the U.S. authorities, and some of this is related to, you know, the changes that the Swiss have made in their own regulation of the banking system, which was notoriously, you know, accommodating of dictators and criminals for a long, long time, thanks to the anonymity that it provided. But, you know, the citizens who are charged are both U.S. citizens and also citizens of foreign countries. The key here is that the financial transactions, the bribery, the payments of bribes, and also the kickbacks that were paid, and the tax evasion that happened happened through U.S. banking channels, which gives the United States legal authority to prosecute. So I think that's the critical element in the process. But what's also important is that Switzerland seems for the first time to be assisting the investigation of a foreign country, in this case the United States, in ways that it generally has not in the past. And, you know, FIFA, being headquartered in Switzerland, has to abide by Swiss law. So in a way, we are in new territory right now. We've never seen this kind of cooperation, and we'll have to see how all the charges and all the trials end up. But the signs right now, with a couple of exceptions, are that, you know, the evidence is very strong that the prosecutors are bringing, judging by the fact that so many of the, 40-plus defendants have already pleaded guilty. And this includes soccer officials, business people, and in a couple of instances, companies.
Yeah, it's interesting, a new territory indeed, because as an international institution, it probably will have to find avenues to sort of exercise its, what do you call it, its legal authority, because even within the UN, you have those possibilities, the International, I think, Court of Juries and so on, But I guess maybe FIFA ultimately might have to work towards that. And I guess maybe I'm just speculating. What are your thoughts on that as we conclude?
On what? Sorry.
On whether they will actually institute as a result of what has happened, or will it just be something reforms and that's the end of it?
I see what you mean. Well, look, I don't think I'm being too cynical when I say that, you know, the bulk of these reforms that FIFA itself passed are very modest, very modest. Some of them are encouraging, but none of these I see as the kind of major structural institutional reforms that are really needed, frankly. And I think it would be rather surprising that an organization that has been largely above the law, for all intents and purposes, and whose members, particularly those at the headquarters, have rewarded themselves so handsomely for, you know, doing us all a favor of running football, in quotation marks, would really change the system all that much. And let me give you just one example of why I think it's unlikely that things are going to change substantially within FIFA. Just the other day, the new FIFA president, Gianni Infantino, was quoted as saying in the press that his $2 million salary was insulting to him. Okay, this is a man who is running an international non-governmental organization that's supposed to, you know, develop the game of soccer. He's not the CEO of a major corporation. He found $2 million a year, and that's, you know, without even counting his expense accounts and all the other perks that the FIFA president gets, as insulting. Now, how is it possible then that the culture of FIFA really is changing all that much? And furthermore, he was elected in no small part because right before the election, part of his big campaign speech was that he was going to increase the amount of money that FIFA was going to pay to individual member associations. And that is the critical cog in this electoral machine that keeps the whole FIFA crooked system lubricated, right? That the central organization pays the individual members a certain amount every year, and that's how you buy votes and influence. So in my opinion, there's not going to be major reform, and that's not to downplay some of the significant changes that have been made, like, for example, greater representation of women, at least an acknowledgement that there has to be some transparency in governance and so on and so forth. But I think what's really needed is for non-insiders at FIFA to have more of a say in how the world game is run. So where are the representatives, say, of fans? Where are the representatives of the players? Where are, you know, the representatives of all the constituencies that make the world of soccer, not just these mainly men in suits who run the show? Also, FIFA needs to pay a lot more for to the hosts of its tournaments in order to cover the huge expenses of staging tournaments like the World Cup, for instance, right? South Africa and Brazil were stuck with a bill of billions of dollars for a tournament that netted, you know, total over the course of 2010 and 2014, nearly $7 billion in profit, tax-free for FIFA, right? So that has to change. And, you know, they need to invest in grassroots soccer, amateur soccer, school soccer, girls soccer, rural soccer, all these things that it says it does, but that in actual, you know, reality, they do very little of beyond sort of corporate social responsibility initiatives. So there's a lot more that needs to happen. I think they've taken a couple of steps in the right direction, and there are some good people, of course, in the organization. And let us hope that, you know, we hear good news coming out of Zurich in the near future, and that at least some of it might be credited to Fatma Samoura, the new Secretary General of FIFA.
Yeah, she has a lot in her hands and a lot in her plate to do, so it's quite interesting. But so the soccer in Qatar will happen and in Russia will happen despite these prosecutions, or will they be revoked?
Oh, no. The World Cup is going to take place in Russia in 2 years and in Qatar in 2022. It would take something truly astonishing to prevent that from happening. And that's another sign that, you know, perhaps the more things change, the more they stay the same.
And we've been speaking with Dr. Peter Aleji, who is a professor of history in the Department of History at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Dr. Aleji was speaking to FIFA's president Gianni Infantino's recent appointment of a first female, first African woman from Senegal, Fatma Samba Diop Samora, to the post of the Secretary General of FIFA. Despite Infantino's efforts to reform the organization, FIFA still faces allegations of corruption. Friday, the European media revealed that top FIFA officials gave themselves high salaries and bonuses, including the former president. We'll bring you more on these developments in our subsequent programs. I am Assumpta Oturu. We've now come to the concluding moments of our program. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Spotlight Africa broadcasts are now archived on the KPFK website, and that's kpfk.org. For any comments, please feel free to email us at spotlightafrica@kpfk.org. So until next time, peace and love. Stay strong. Stay tuned to KPFK. Coming up.